Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Your first mission is to keep yourself happy.
It's living for self that is so exhausting and frustrating because you were made to live for Him. So when you begin to please Him, you begin to thrive. It's not a burden. It's not a duty. It's a joy. I come alive. This is what I was made for.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Prepare to get smarterer. This is Wretched Radio. No doubt you're thinking, how could that possibly happen when you're hosting the program? Well, the answer to that question is Fortis Institute. That's right, Fortis Institute. There are a number of bright guys and me that talk about issues that are important to Christians. If you ain't been to FortisPlus.org, you're missing Dr. Jason Lyle, one of our fellows who's going to make us smarterer. Jimmy, hold on tight. He's kind of bright, this Jason Lyle fellow.
Recently, scientists have taken human brain tissue grown in a lab and have attached it to a computer chip to help a robot navigate obstacles. It's pretty amazing. They hope that such research might pave the way for more complex cybernetic interfaces in the future. And perhaps such technology could be used to repair neurological damage using these techniques to graft human brain tissue onto a human brain. And three things occurred to me as I read this article. First, the obvious design implication. Human brain cells are designed by God. And as such, they are superior in some respects, at least, to artificial technology. Otherwise, why would you try and use human brain tissue to augment artificial technology? Why not just use pure artificial technology? And of course, that makes sense if human brain tissue has intelligence behind it, which it does. But it makes no sense if human brain tissue is simply an accident of nature. Why would you use an accident to try and improve existing technology? That makes no sense. Second, the hope of using this kind of technology to aid in treating injuries or disease is a morally commendable use of science. It's a good thing to do. Jesus, in his earthly ministry, healed the sick. He temporarily reversed the curse. And so that's a commendable thing for us to do as well, as much as we can on our creaturely level. Third, the scientists involved in this experiment, they noted that there are still some problems that remain to be solved. And one they mentioned in particular was the problem of insufficient nutrient supply. And that again reminded me of the absurdity of evolution. Because you see, the various parts of the human body are designed to work together. Normally, human brain cells are surrounded by other cells and other structures that support them and deliver nutrients and oxygen and things like that. And when you separate cells from the structure in which they're designed to work, they have a tendency to die. and that's one reason among many as to why something as sophisticated as the human body could not come about in an evolutionary piecemeal fashion, right, as Darwin had supposed. All the essential parts of the body have to work together or the body dies. And that what that means is that the first human body had to have been created with all the parts working together at the same time, just as the Bible teaches in Genesis.
I do believe we just got blinded with science. That's Dr. Jason Lyle. That is his territory, science. He's an he's a really smarterer guy than I am. And you can catch all of his hot takes and all of the director's cuts that feature him. Here comes our favorite word. Free! Just go to FortisPlus.org, get the app, and you will get content like that every single day. I do believe Jason was describing irreducible complexity. That if you've got something that's complex and you just pull out a part, well, the rest of it doesn't work. And the same thing is true of the human body. And you can do this 24/7. Just pick any body part or function or system. Okay, what came first, the eyeball or the wires that connect the eyeball to the brain? Which one came first? You'd go, well, I guess the eyeball, and then it grew wires. Well, no, it couldn't have just been an eye, because there would be no reason for it to exist. And it would, what was that word Jason used? Die. It just would, there's no point to it. Everything has to be there all together. Reproductive organs, that were the eggs available first, or the fallopian tubes, or the uterine wall? How exactly did all of that come together via time and chance? And the answer is, it didn't. And as long as I brought up this subject, was just reading the election results on the life issue. Don't know if you caught much of that, but there were a number of states that actually had life on the ballot. There were 10 states where voters were asked to adopt the arbitrary standard of viability. In other words, if it can survive, if it's viable, then we won't murder it. It is entirely arbitrary. It is. I was just talking to somebody. I don't want to get into details because I can't remember who it is. But we were talking about the life issue and to an individual who is pro-choice. And this individual thought, well, you know, once it's viable at like 20, 24 weeks, well, hold on a second. What happens when science is able to keep a child alive prior to that arbitrary line? And the answer was, well, then we'll just move the line. It's incoherent. It is entirely arbitrary. Here are the states that voted. There were three. It would be a bit of an exaggeration to say they held the line on life, but Florida, Nebraska, South Dakota, those three states decided we're not going to change, we're not going to overturn any more pro-life legislation. But to give you an idea of the other states, which included Arizona, Colorado, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, etc. And I'll just use Arizona because it's kind of representative of the other states. They overturned the current ban on abortion after the first 15 weeks of pregnancy. So that means death to babies. Makes abortion legal anytime prior to fetal viability. Oh, that word. Prevents the state legislature from enacting any new laws to protect the unborn prior to viability. Well, good. Let's keep them out of these decisions. Allows late-term abortion if keeping the child would affect the mother's mental health. Well, how convenient and how deadly. Overturns current regulations on abortion. Prenatal consent requirement for minors. Well, I'm sorry, did I say prenatal? Parental. Pretty much the same word letters involved, wouldn't you say? Great. What wonderful legislation for the safety of children. We wouldn't want parents involved with those types of decisions. Let's let the state dictate if our children can get abortions. What wickedness. It overturned requirement that abortions be conducted by a licensed physician. Cool. I guess anybody can get into the murder business. This isn't good for women. This isn't good for children. Requirement that the pregnant mother must undergo an ultrasound. Oh, that's a big fat drag. Because we know ultrasounds are a weapon in the pro-life arsenal. 80% of the time, a woman sees her baby, she chooses life. That is a drag that is being overturned. This seems to be a very good time to point your attention to preborn ministries. They provide those ultrasounds for free. Well, okay, to the person. They're $28 a piece. If you can provide ultrasounds, you will be saving lives. Period. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched. Somebody was telling me, so please don't take this as medical advice, that with 3D ultrasounds, when you go to see your baby in the womb, apparently they are so detailed. They can see everything. And I think that's excellent. And I think that's good. But it also, I think, is causing a fair amount of angst for a fair amount of parents, because It finds stuff. Well, that could possibly be. So we'll keep an eye on that. And it could cause an awful lot of grief for parents. So make sure you're mindful of both sides. It can provide really great information, but sometimes it provides information that's unclear that can cause a mom to be super stressed out. This was not a medical professional's advice. Colorado. A number of states did this, established a constitutional right for reproductive freedom. I think it was Daryl Harrison who tweeted, memed, that's like calling slavery job creation. We need job creation. And everybody would go, what are you talking about, Willis? That is ridiculous. That's not job creation. That's horrible. Ditto when it comes to the life issue. There's other states, number of them, by the way, this is just Maryland, establishes a fundamental right to abortion at any stage of pregnancy. On and on it goes. The life battle, it rages. Please get in the battle. Support preborn. Keep talking about life. We have got to elevate the conversation. Turn up the intensity. Now's the time because there will be other elections. And in the meantime, more babies are going to be dying. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to Wretched Radio today. And if you're anything like us, you feel the constant pressure to play catch up with today's rapid fire changes in this culture. We get it. And that's why Fortis Institute exists. Every day, we're bringing you content that will keep you grounded in biblical truth. Videos that dive into hot topics that are happening today. Podcasts covering everything from marriage and parenting to deep dives in theology. And of course, our webinars, which feature some of the sharpest Christian thinkers around. And the best part about it all, it's absolutely free, no strings attached. But here's the thing, we do need your help to keep this going. If you would prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just supporting us, you're helping us equip believers. So why not get the information? You can do that right now at fortisinstitute.org and get answers to any questions you might have about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Preborn Ministries, pro-life ministry, rescuing babies. The war, let me tell you, it's raging out there. And Preborn is right on the front lines providing what is so powerful, ultrasounds. When a woman sees her baby 80% of the time, it's a no-brainer. That's my child. That's a baby in there, not a blob of tissue. Worldview is getting pumped into everybody through Hollywood, social media, the internet, universities, businesses, and government. If you'd be kind enough to consider supporting Preborn Ministries, that would be groovy. Lives are saved. Women, men, hear the gospel. Please consider supporting this network of clinics that is doing such great work. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Marriage and parenting, they're not for the faint of heart. And in a fallen world, those sacred callings can feel overwhelming. Maybe you're struggling with communication. Maybe your kids seem a bit out of control. Maybe you're just trying to keep your head above water. But here's the truth. Your home wasn't designed just to survive.
But what would it look like for someone to catch sight of your marriage and think, I think it's really, really alive and it's thriving?
Join Pastor Brad Bigney, who spent over 3 decades as a biblical counselor, helping thousands of couples and families move from barely surviving to truly thriving. Each episode of Thrive tackles real issues with biblical wisdom, from resolving conflicts to rekindling romance to raising godly children in an ungodly world. Don't settle for survival mode. Let God's word transform your home into what He designed it to be. Listen to Thrive with Pastor Brad Bigney, available now on Fortis Plus or your favorite podcast platforms. You can find out more about Pastor Brad Bigney and Thrive at fortisinstitute.org.
Know your church fathers. Tatian is known as Asia's first Christian theologian.
He came from Assyria and studied under Justin Martyr before returning to prepare a path for the gospel into Western Asia. He wrote A Harmony of the Four Gospels. It was the primary gospel text in Syria throughout the 3rd and 4th centuries.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hello and welcome to Wretched Radio. Today we'd like to discuss...
You okay?
You gonna interrupt me?
Why are you talking
anytime
like that?
Anytime today?
Why are you talking
like that? Well, I was trying to sound like Kamala Harris. I mean, I was trying to sound like I'm smarter than everybody. That was condescending because I do feel smarter. Now, I feel smarterer. That doesn't mean I am smarterer. It just means I feel that way, having listened to 2.5 minutes of Jason Lyle. Don't you just feel like, wow, there is so much stuff going on in the world that does not involve politics per se, that should be of Christian interest. What is happening in laboratories right now? We should be interested with, so for instance, gene therapy. Wow, is there some amazing stuff going on? Really smart people that are coming up with cures, say, to diseases, deadly diseases, cancers, and not they're doing it in a way that is just, I think, well, smarter than the chemotherapy route, which we're grateful for its successes, but we all know how harsh it is. And so there are people who are coming up with great inventions, but there will not be much, if any, of a conversation about anything ethical. There will be little conversation about anything that might be moral or immoral. Furthermore, there will be very little conversation about what are the implications of this in the future. Because anything that gets introduced into our culture that's new, if you will, it's going to affect somebody somewhere, somehow. Those conversations need to be had, but I fear they won't unless Christians engage and talk about these issues. That's why we're thrilled Andrew Walker, ethicist from Southern Seminary, he is a part of the Fortis Institute. He's one of our fellows, and he's talking about issues all the time that deal with ethics. Sort of like this hot take that you can see every single day. We want to send you stuff just like this.
Hey, everybody. Andrew Walker here, and I want to make a quick take on an interesting article that I just read talking about a new device in Switzerland referred to as a suicide capsule.
Cool.
And this suicide capsule is a part of a growing euthanasia regime where you can get into this almost like space-like pod, press a button, and the pod fills up with oxygen, knocks you out, and then proceeds to take your life.
Uh-oh. Jimmy, I'm a little bit nervous because we talked about this a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
I hope that Dr. Andrew Walker gets it right. Because he's smarterer.
If you're not paying attention to what's going on in the West, we have, in many places, growing acceptance of euthanasia. Euthanasia is the willful suicide of someone, usually when they have some type of terminal diagnosis. And while we want to extend compassion and mercy for those who are dealing with painful diagnoses, we have to understand we have not been given the permission to take our own life. God is the author of our life from start to finish. And we understand that our life is subject to His sovereignty, not our preferences and not our desires. So we want to establish that from the theological outset, but then we want to think about this ethically. And here's what I think we have to be really concerned about when it comes to something like the suicide pod or the suicide capsule, is that when we violate the principle that we do not take life, we open up the possibility of life being taken for other reasons. And this is the biggest problem with euthanasia. Aside from the fact that we are committing suicide ourselves, and not understanding our lives as subject to God's sovereignty. Wherever euthanasia takes root in a nation, the justifications to utilize euthanasia only expand. They never contract. And what we have to understand is that this is a part of the growing epidemic within the culture of death. And Christianity promotes a culture of life, which is why we do not permit euthanasia. We don't act callously towards people's suffering. We allow for palliative care and for reasonable pain management, but we don't take the active agency of ending our lives.
If I
because
might.
Again, once we violate
Andrew,
the principle
Andrew, quiet.
Of taking
Andrew,
life.
Zip it. He might be smarter, but so rude. If you are having to make a decision about a loved one's end, or you've had to make that decision, I hope you caught that. That you can provide palliative care, but we can't make aggressive, assertive efforts to take life. And if you have withheld things that could keep them alive, that is not the same as aggressively doing things. The key to this, in my estimation, is it clear, as best we can tell, and usually we can tell, is this individual's life soon over? Is God clearly calling this person home? And if that is the case, and this needs to be done with wisdom, I think having multiple people involved, making a decision to stop different types of care does not mean that you are taking the life of your loved one. All right, Andrew, you can keep talking now.
We open up the possibility of life being taken for other reasons elsewhere, yeah. Which is exactly what has happened in all of these countries where euthanasia takes root. It first begins with justifications for terminal diagnoses, yeah. And then it expands for
pain,
justifications around psychological disorders or types of harms to people's sense of dignity that they don't want to have taken from them. So again, we do not support euthanasia. We understand that God is the author of life from the start and to the finish of it.
That's a good sound effect. Was reading an article titled Caught in the Wake of the Sexual Revolution. This, too, was the introduction of euthanasia, specifically, well, not euthanasia per se, as an end of life, but the taking of life, killing babies in the womb. Since the sexual revolution exploded in the 60s, our culture has adopted the motto, as long as you're not hurting anyone. That, by the way, is the argument for euthanasia. Hey, it's not hurting anyone. Well, except for the person who's going to prematurely die. Nevertheless, the slogan was, hey, as long as you're not hurting anyone, you can do whatever you want. I do believe that's what Anton LaVey said. That was kind of his code of ethics. As a Satanist, just do whatever you want. Well, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. Well, guess what? It does hurt people. It has left millions of people in its wake. Now, you can start out with the 60, 70 million babies whose lives have been taken, but this article goes on to cite the damage that it does to women and men. The sexual revolution has led to a massive increase in rape, incest, assault, and disease. Did you know that? I would bet the farm, and I can do that because I don't own a farm, that when this conversation was being had in the 60s about free love, free sex, hey, this will help in those regards because people will be able to be frisky like dogs and cats and there won't be any rape because of it. Wrong. According to the FBI, it has jumped radically. There were 17,000 cases. It's awful, nevertheless, of rape in 1960. 2018, 143,000. That is 4.5 times as many rapes annually per capita. Worldviews have consequences. pornography. Another fruit of the sexual revolution. It exploits women, infantilizes men. It is a $150 billion industry. It seems obvious, but the more a man views pornography, this is from the article, the more it heightens his lust for sex. However, it doesn't enhance his ability. In fact, it causes all kinds of problems, which we will not discuss here. The price men pay, because usually we talk about women, it's steep. Growing evidence, pornography exposure can lead to social anxiety, depression, low motivation, some other things, and negative self-perceptions and physical appearance. In other words, they suffer from what so many suffer from on social media. And it creates men who refuse to take responsibility, fail to mature emotionally, spiritually, and relationally, and are unable to take their place as leaders in the home, business, and the church. In other words, worldviews have consequences. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. I'm Jimmy Hicks. We start with Spirit Airlines. They're preparing for bankruptcy, surprising absolutely no one. Their stock has dropped over 90% this year, which can only mean they'll start charging for the oxygen masks during the safety demonstrations. But seriously, the airline plans to furlough over 300 pilots in January after their recent merger attempt with Frontier Airlines failed to go through. Given their reputation, some passengers might even consider that an upgrade to their travel experience. Speaking of crashes, Microsoft's latest attempt to police language has their Word program now flagging terms like maternity leave as non-inclusive. They're suggesting alternatives like parental leave and birth-related leave because apparently we need a software company to remind us that men can have babies. And their own president, Brad Smith, warned about AI leading to Orwellian censorship by 2024. Well, congratulations, Mr. Smith. You're right on schedule. And to Idaho now, where the Southwest District Health Board has voted to stop offering COVID-19 vaccines at its facilities. The board actually listened to the medical experts. I know, shocking. And one board member even pointed out that anyone who still wants the shots can get them at Walmart, right next to the garden hoses and candy bars. And from the You Can't Make This Up department, a Canadian women's prison is demonstrating peak progressivism by punishing a female inmate who had the audacity to object to sharing space with a convicted child predator who identifies as transgender. The woman suffered broken ribs and an assault by the biological inmate, but don't worry, the prison made sure justice was served. How? Well, they put her, the woman, the real woman, in segregation for inciting the attack. She was punished for calling a pedophile a pedophile, and the parole board, showing their commitment to equity, even cited the attacker's indigenous heritage as a mitigating factor. And speaking of men in dresses, Britain's oldest breastfeeding charity is experiencing what we're going to politely call an identity crisis. Trustee Miriam Main resigned after the organization decided that biological men should be welcomed into the breastfeeding support groups. Obviously, one thing new mothers need during their most vulnerable moments is a man in a dress explaining lactation techniques. And Disney's back in the news as their remake of Snow White continues its march toward wokeness, with lead actress Rachel Zegler apparently taking her role as the fairest of them all a bit too seriously. She's been busy on social media wishing ill upon Trump voters, which is quite the marketing strategy for a family film. And what might be the most disturbing news today, support groups are now claiming children as young as 2 can identify as transgender. Yeah, 2. An age when most kids still think they're dinosaurs half the time. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, just download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at fortisinstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Important dates in Christian history. 1456. Johann Gutenberg produces the first printed Bible, and his press becomes a means for dissemination of new ideas and catalyzing changes in politics and theology. Without the printing press, the Reformation may have looked very different. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
What are you doing?
I'm being biblical.
What?
What, have you unhitched your Old Testament? This is Wretched Radio Unhitchers. That's what they should be called. If you follow a pastor who wants to unhitch the Old Testament, then you are officially an unhitcher, which is utterly ridiculous. Wasn't going to talk about my sermon on Sunday, but there's a text in Matthew that would make zero sense. No, actually, pretty much the entire Gospel of Matthew would be almost like reading Aesop's fables or a hero's story. Because if it isn't tethered to something that is historic, national, religious, it just doesn't. It's not colored. It's just a tale. But the Gospels are connected directly to the Old Testament. Okay, for instance, and I have a confession to make. For the sermon coming up this Sunday, this is going to be hard. I was almost tempted to skip a section. Almost tempted to skip a section.
Shame on you.
There were two reasons for it. Number one is I looked at it and it was like, not sure there's, how does that become a sermon? And I almost received permission because if you read through commentaries of old or preachers of old whose sermons have been assembled, sometimes they do skip sections. And I thought, all right, this is one of those chances, but I hunkered down and you just keep reading a text. Try this at home. If you're looking for something new to do to keep your private quiet time or your Bible reading really engaging, just stare at a text. And that is what I did. And it was like, whoa. And here's the irony to it. A text that, how shame on me is right, that I thought, well, we'll just jump to the next one. Maybe nobody will notice. We'll get into Matthew chapter 18. Jesus delivers five discourses in Matthew. And this is the fourth one. And I thought, well, we'll just start with it and nobody will notice. Well, first of all, what I learned is that the end of Matthew 17 is actually connected to Matthew 18. Be careful. When you're reading your Bible, sometimes those chapter breaks, they can send us down a path of, well, here's a nugget. Oh, next paragraph, there's a nugget. Next paragraph, okay, there's the lesson. Next paragraph, oh, that's a different story, different lesson there. You gotta watch for the flow, and Matthew's flow is staggering. So I just kept staring at Matthew 17, the last three verses. Here's the story. Peter, he's outside of probably his house. And somebody, the tax collector for the temple tax, asks him, does your master pay this? Peter answers, comes into the house, and Jesus, before Peter can say a word, asks him, so let's talk about taxes. And you can only imagine Peter's like, boing. But then Jesus provides the tax by telling Peter, go fish, not with a net, but with a pole. And you're going to catch a fish, the first fish, it's going to have a coin in its mouth. Use that to pay the temple tax. Okay, that miracle's different, isn't it? It just feels different. I think I identified six different ways that it's different than the other miracles. Nevertheless, it's like, and I was tempted to just kind of jump over that one, not because I was embarrassed about the miracle, because it is an unusual way of showing a sign and wonder. But in staring at the text, this was the result. I think this might be, these three verses might be one of the most densely populated theological treatises in the entire Gospel of Matthew. Shame on me. And one of the observations in the text is Jesus, who clearly has power over fish. Well, what does that have to do with the price of tea in Texas on a Tuesday? The answer is Psalm 8. It is a messianic psalm that talks about humans, that we are the ones who are the subduers. But in five different places in the New Testament, including Jesus himself, identifies that psalm as being about him. Now, that That alone should cause you to go, wait a second, let me get this straight. Something that was written 1,000 years earlier, give or take about 950 years earlier, that was talking about Jesus, and that's affirmed by Jesus himself, and I think it's in 1 Corinthians, it's in Hebrews. This Bible is really connected. It's really intricately written and designed. And wait a second, it wasn't just done by one guy who was really clever. That's right. It was done by dozens of authors over the course of centuries, different languages, different continents. This book is supernatural. And those that would say, well, we need to untether the Old Testament because it's kind of embarrassing, then you're an unhitcher. And I would suggest you need to take a class or do some studying on the elegance of the Bible, that this thing is woven. It's the tapestry is beautiful. You can't pull a thread out. You just can't, because they are just all connected to one another. And that should encourage you. So let's go back to that Old Testament to make sure that we aren't murmuring. There's a life lesson that Andy could teach. How to say words that are more positive and uplifting or something like that, because the Jewish people, they were murmurers. It's an onomatopoetic word in Hebrew. It sounded, that's what the word sounds like. Trust me, we have tapes. It's an individual just ain't happy about nothing. This is taken from Ligonier, unveiling the true nature of grumbling, to murmur, mutter, discontent. It's a constant struggle. This is in the Old Testament. We see the Jewish people; they were murmuring, "Hey, we want food back. It was better back there. Why don't we have anything to eat?" They were grumblers. Grumbling reappears in the Gospels, when the Pharisees and the scribes murmured at Jesus because he was eating with tax collectors and sinners. The Jewish people grumbled at his teaching. "I'm the bread that came down from heaven," said Jesus. This is a mirror image of the people of Israel complaining in the wilderness. What a brilliant insight into John 6, 41 through 42. The disciples followed suit, grumbling to themselves that Jesus' teaching was too hard. John 6, 60. You know, I think that the disciples, especially Peter, gets a pretty tough critique over the centuries. Well, but just, okay, going back to our fish story, he's outside talking to some the tax collectors, talking about a tax issue. The text doesn't indicate it. Did he go straight back into the house, or did he wander around? Did he go shopping? Did he go fishing for a bit? But there must have been some time in between. Jesus wasn't there. He walks through the door and asks Peter a question. "Peter, who should pay taxes?" How would you feel if you were Peter? Let me think about this. And you're dealing with Jesus, who is illuminating the Old Testament, and he's living out, if you will, the New Testament. It would be a little daunting, wouldn't it? I mean, how would you like to be questioned by Jesus? Especially when so much of his teaching was so different than the teaching of the Pharisees and the scribes. Back to Ligonier. "Do all things without grumbling," Philippians 2:14. "Don't grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Instead, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. And do not grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer." That's 1 Peter, that's 1 Corinthians, that's James 5, it's Philippians 2. Grumbling is a big deal. And its evil twin is discontentment. Ask yourself the question, you're going to have the answer immediately. What device promotes discontentment more than any other invention in human history? Answer: social media. That is all that it ever does. Go to somebody's social feed. Do you see anybody with an unflattering picture? Rarely. Only if it's like, ha, look at me. And then it's somebody who's probably just loaded with pride. I just want to show that I can look stupid because I'm not. Social media, it promotes it because we suffer from comparison all the time. And the fruit that it produces, it's a nasty sin. How do you overcome it? You realize you have everything valuable in the person and work of Jesus Christ. And if my home is too small, my clothes aren't very fancy, my haircut is great clips, you're okay. Because those things pale in comparison to the prize of Jesus Christ. This is Wretched Radio.
Chances are pretty good you love Dr. John MacArthur's Master Seminary in Los Angeles, California, because they equip men to rightly divide the word of truth. But here's the replication strategy. The men from overseas come to Los Angeles, they get equipped, and then they return to their home country to start up a little mini master seminary.
All of these guys that are doing this, and there are 100 of our missionaries out there now doing this kind of training, they all come from the Master Seminary. And as a result of that, their theology is solid, sound. It's the same. So there's a unity to all of this. They take basically what they experienced in training at the Master Seminary and Grace Community Church. They train pastors the way they were trained, and they train them to handle the Word of God accurately.
Amazing. Would you please consider sponsoring your own seminary? You can learn more at wretched.org/pastor, wretched.org/pastor.
The lost generation wandered without direction after World War I. Well, today, there's another war raging. It's a cultural battle, and it's leaving young men disoriented and directionless. Raised on unfiltered entertainment and endless online content, Gen Z is facing unprecedented challenges with loneliness and depression. But there is hope. That's Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson.
Young man, you need to be learning the Bible. Yes, you got to learn your trade, and yes, you need to be learning what you're learning in school. But ultimately, we want to be transformed by the renewal of our mind.
As Jeremiah 6:16 says, stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is and walk in it. That's Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson. And it's available right now at Fortis Plus and all of your favorite podcast platforms. And you can also visit FortisInstitute.org to learn more about Dr. Adam Tyson, Way of Manhood, and all of our other content.
Would you like the university experience without the, you know, university experience? The Masters University invites you to visit their campus, or you can visit them online at masters.edu/wretched to discover a Christian college that is biblical, that offers all of the academic excellence you desire: sports, athletics, arts, communication, all of the activities of, you know, a secular university without the, you know, secular parts. Please consider the Masters University online, or of course, on-campus learning, undergrad, master's, and doctoral programs. It's Masters University, the university with the university experience without the university experience. Masters.edu/wretched.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is service, the spiritual ability to meet people's physical needs. Just as Christ came not to be served, but to serve, God provides the office of deacon, those who are charged and equipped to care for the physical needs of the church. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Throw rock into a pack of dogs. One that yelp is one that got hit. Stop laughing at me. You're breaking me out of character here. This is Wretched Radio. I'm kung-fuing, giving some wisdom here.
That's what you're doing.
Because apparently I threw a rock and it hit somebody in his great clips head.
Oh.
What's your problem with the great clips?
I just said I've never had a good haircut there.
Well, you didn't find the right great clipper. There's good great clippers and there's bad great clippers. That's true any place.
Yeah.
Even at the fancy schmancy salons, I just... I remember years ago, this is like a long time ago, because when I discovered barbers, oh man, that's the way to go. They're far less expensive, although that's gone up too. And it's just, it's quick. And it's not all the primping and the, and it doesn't have the attitude. I'm not going to mention the name of Aveda because that would probably be unfair, but years ago, I remember calling up the Aveda school because that's where they train and it's cheaper. So you can, you talk about rolling the dice. And I remember the attitude on the lady on the Aveda training salon or whatever they called themselves. Yeah, I'd like to get my hair cut tomorrow at 2:00. Very good. You have an appointment with Jeanne. Okay, let me write that. How do you spell that? Jane. Jane. I'm getting a haircut with Jane. No, you're getting your hair styled with Jeanne. Let's go back to the Old Testament. Shall we? Is the Exodus a myth? The short answer is no. Of course it's not. Titus Kennedy doing a nice job, because you will hear an argument if you watch any YouTube videos. Hey, there's just absolutely no archaeological evidence that the mass exodus out of Egypt took place. Well, it's important that the actual exodus did happen, because it would undermine, obviously, the veracity of the Bible, the Old Testament, but it would also undermine the veracity of the New. Because remember, Egypt is a picture of Jesus. He's all over Matthew chapters 1 and 2. Now, Jesus is a picture. And even into Matthew chapter 4, Jesus goes into the wilderness and he's tempted and succeeds. How many days? 40. How many years were the Jews in the wilderness? 40 years. Did they succeed? They failed. Jesus is the Old Testament, New Testament, just you can't unhitch it, is what I'm trying to say to you. And in Matthew chapter 1, it talks about that Jesus, under threat of Herod wanting to kill the newborn king, had to do what? Escape to Egypt. And then he came out of Egypt. So if the Exodus didn't happen, the picture that is painted for us in Matthew, that didn't happen either. So it would undermine the veracity of the New Testament also. It's obvious from archaeological discoveries that Semites from Canaan had migrated to Egypt and settled in the northeastern Nile Delta region known as Goshen. Jimmy, I think this would be a good time to hear an impersonation from the Ten Commandments. My favorite. I've got two favorite impersonations. When the Jews were in the land of Goshen,
okay,
it was the guy's wife who was interested in Moses. Moses, Moses, Moses. Thank you very much. That was one. Then there's Edward G. Robinson. Wow, am I dusting off the Edward G. Robinson? Wow, where's your Moses now? See. Thank you very much. I think that actually was an impersonation of Rob Schneider doing an impersonation. By the way, did you hear Rob Schneider's Roman Catholic? Yep. His wife, once again, the wife, the husband follows sometimes. She's Roman Catholic, and now Rob Schneider is Roman Catholic, and he's not ashamed of it. He's rather overt about it. Back to our article from Titus Kennedy. There is oodles of discoveries that the Jewish people lived in Goshen, specific forms of pottery, burial customs, tools and weapons, inscriptions, historical records, a Levantine breed of sheep, wall paintings, imported deities. All of that indicates, hey, a lot of Jewish people were living in Egypt. Shouldn't be a surprise. There's evidence of people who can be specifically identified as Hebrews residing in Egypt prior to the Exodus. An Egyptian list of household slaves on papyrus, that would be Papyrus Brooklyn 35.1446, probably originating in Thebes, 17th century BC, contains the names of more than 30 Jewish people. who were given new Egyptian names. There's also policy of widespread enslavement of Jews or Asiatics implemented in Egypt. They began with Amos I, A-H-M-O-S-E, and the founding of the 18th dynasty around the time when there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. The enslavement included mud brick production, construction projects, and agriculture. Huh. Sounds like there is evidence that the Jewish people were in Egypt. Thutmose, T-H-U-T-M-O-S-E, the third, ruled for more than 40 years. This, along with other events that fit the Exodus narrative, indicates a historical exodus would have occurred during his reign. The evidence is overwhelming, really. Ancient Egyptian documents, inscriptions, archaeological findings indicate a mysterious death of the Pharaoh's firstborn son. Well, that can't be! That's in the Bible! The military's decline in Egypt, the abandonment of his palace in the Nile Delta, the attempted erasure of Hatshepsut, and a slave raid into Canaan. Two Egyptian inscriptions mentioning the nomads of Yahweh from an Amenhotep temple appear to describe the wandering Israelites around 1400 BC between the Exodus and the conquest of Canaan. These inscriptions indicate the Egyptians were familiar with the personal name of Yahweh and with the Israelites, the only people in the ancient times known to have worshipped Yahweh. Soon after, the Israelites appeared in Canaan, conquering cities, settling the region. Evidence related to the historicity and date of Canaan's conquest? Guess what? Got that too, because there were correspondences between Canaanite kings and the Pharaoh. They were called Amarna letters, a group of outsiders who are waging war and taking cities by both force and guile. Those were the Jewish people. Isn't it just amazing? Just a little bit of digging reveals that the accusations of the Bible just have nothing behind them other than they're put on a well-made YouTube video. One more note. Archaeological evidence of the destruction linked to the Israelite conquest has been cited as key cities named in the Joshua narrative, including Jericho, which shows massive fire destruction, fallen walls, no looting, and long abandonment around 1400 BC. Settlement evidence from many towns demonstrates a new group of people had appeared in Canaan who had unique architecture, pottery, diets, and religious traditions. There was a stele, not thievery, S-T-E-L-E, late 13th century. Calls this people Israel. There's more, but I think we've got the point. Don't we? Well, why don't we see the evidence inside of the Red Sea? Well, you put something in water that swishes around in violent ways. And how long do you think it's going to stay there? Let's continue in the Old Testament, shall we? Mitch Chase of mitchchase.substack.com. A cloth of wool and linen mixed together. Moses said, you will not wear those two fabrics blended together. That would be your Deuteronomy 22:11, Rexella. What is this? It's related to clothing, obviously. It's a part of a series of commands which forbid the mixture of certain things. This is the text, of course, that gets used. Well, do you wear mixed fabrics? Third, it doesn't forbid wearing wool or wearing linen. The command says don't wear them mixed together. And no explanation is given. So what could it be? Well, we should ask that question. Wonder whether such a mixture had occurred in Egypt or in Canaan. And thus, the prohibition would reinforce the distinction between the holy lives of the Israelites. In other words, what if the people who were living in that land did that? They blended fabrics together. The Egyptians blended fabrics together. And God wanted his chosen people to be set apart. Well, then that would indicate this is just another one of those ways that these people called the Jews were to be a light to lighten the Gentiles. That this nation would be so distinct, so different, that people would see the blessings of God on the land and ask, who's your deity? We need to know. That was the role of the Jewish people. That was the nation of the Jews as part of the Abrahamic covenant, the land, the nation, and the seed, that this would be a peculiar people. So the next time somebody says, hey, what about the blending of fabrics? Now you know the rest of the story. Wow, this was just loaded with spot-on impersonations. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.